Conversations in the Arts and Humanities introduces you to the people and passions of the Faculty of Arts and Humanities at Vancouver Island University and shares stories about events and projects happening on campus. My name's Theo Finnegan, and I'm talking to Leon Potter from VIU's Theatre Department. On Friday, October 20th, from 10 till 11:30 in the Malaspina Theatre, Leon will give a presentation titled Spectacular Spectacle, a brief look at the history of special effects on stage. Leon Potter is a professor at VIU, where he teaches acting, theatre history, and public speaking. He's worked in the theatre and film industry since 1989 as an award-winning actor, a director, writer, designer, technician, and producer. He's had the privilege of working with such well-known individuals as Mark Rylance, Alan Rickman, Sir Peter Hall, Fiona Shaw, and Michael Bublé, and he was the founding artistic director of the Looking Glass Theatre and later artistic director of Blue Peanut Productions. Leon is a professional member of the Directors Guild of Great Britain and the Canadian Actors Equity Association. Do you remember the first play you worked on, say, professionally?
The first gig I got paid for was actually in Vancouver, and it was a production of Macbeth. It was called Macbeth at Camp 6. So the whole thing was based, the swords were like lead pipes and different things like that. So it was all sort of the prisoners of this space were doing this production of Macbeth. And so the violence got much bigger and much heavier, and it was very gruff, and it was fantastic. But yeah, that was right, weirdly, that was right after my second year of university.
So were there, so one of the things you're going to talk about, or the main thing in your colloquium is like special effects on
yes.
stage.
Yeah.
Were there special effects involved in that Macbeth production? Like,
No. Weirdly, special effects I didn't really get into until a little bit later. I was doing, when I started working with set design, I became really intrigued by how the idea of theater magic and how it happened. And I've always loved playing around with it. One of the small lighting design projects I did years ago was called, you know, Nightmare in Room 136, and it was, you know, every special effect I could think of and do on my minimal little budget. And it became fascinating to me. So a little bit later, I was in London, and I was at the Museum of the Moving Image in London, and I found that the idea of the moving image projections went back not to the beginning of film or anything like that, but went back centuries, thousands of years, right down to the candle with the little picture of the horse on the steel thing that went around and around and around. So there were so many different elements of special effects and things you could do that I became fascinated with it. And one of the joys of working in the theater is solving those problems, right? If you're doing Singing in the Rain, how do you make it rain? If you are doing Mary Poppins, how does the furniture fall apart and then magically come back together again? Anytime you can create something that comes off as unrealistic or unreal, right? You go back to in the late 19th century, early 20th century, you had in France, you had this little theater called the Theater of the Grand Guignol. And the Theater of the Grand Guignol, their entire mandate, they didn't think an evening was complete if somebody hadn't vomited, passed out, or run screaming from the theater, because they would chop off hands and, you know, sew limbs onto people and dissolve them, torture them, etc., etc. So all of these things that no human being could actually withstand, and so clearly what's happening on stage is fake, but you try and make it look realistic so that people are amazed by it. Yeah. The reason that I called the colloquium Spectacular Spectacle is because when you look at the Aristotelian elements, the six major, plot, character, thought, diction, music, and spectacle. Spectacle was always sort of the last on the rung. And, of course, in the days of ancient Greece, spectacle was lowest on the rung. You had a big empty plateia. You had some minimal scene-changing ability with a periactoi, which is simply a three-sided set. But then, even there, you had elements such as the deus ex machina, right? And the idea of, like, the god and the machine that comes in and swoops down and whatnot was literally a crane that lifted actors up and over a wall and dropped them onto the stage, which back then would have been magnificent, right? Like, what a fantastic option. So when you see that and you're like, okay, so that's wonderful. Like, how, like, so then what? And that's, this is where this idea came from. I said, so me as a set designer, I've always been intrigued by, like, okay, so how did they make all these magical things happen? And how did they create this, that awe, that sense of wonder and awe? And of course, you'll go from Greece, you go into Rome and you have the Colosseum. Wow. I mean, you look at the Namake events at the Colosseum where they would flood it and literally have naval battles inside. There was another one where they emptied the whole place out and brought in an entire forest. Mm. They filled it with a forest and animals and then invited the audience to come and hunt. It was mind-boggling, right? And so there was that sense of awe and wonder that you could create, right? And then fast forward to the age of the medieval period, where suddenly you had, had this opportunity to create stories of stories like Everyman, morality plays, where you have the decision, do I go to heaven, do I go to hell? Well, how do you make heaven look amazing? How do you make hell look terrifying, right? And in the Hellmouth, you would have fire and smoke and demons and this and that, and a huge, terrifying mouth of monster that would eat people. And in the heavens, of course, you would have flying, levitation, elevators and trap doors.
I was going to ask you, when does special effects become a thing in the theater? But it seems like it's...
I think it always has been. Yeah. Right from the early days of telling the stories of a hunt around a fire, right? There, as soon as somebody put on a mask and or sang or anything, there was immediately a sense of awe and wonder in storytelling and in receiving a story and seeing somebody tell it to you and feel like you're a part of it. And that to me is just a, like, one of the fascinating elements of it.
So I wonder if you could sort of say that there's a kind of loose definition of special effects is sort of almost anything that augments just the human body. Like, so a mask, right?
Is
in a way...
In a way, a costume which adds a special
props
effect.
Props or whatever, right?
Exactly.
In your blurb, though, you talk about how you're going to focus on raising the curtain on sort of an earlier period than ours, like maybe 19th century or...
I think what I really enjoy about this is, about this topic, is the fact that now, with the world of AI, you've got text-to-image generators, projectors everywhere, and electricity that really help, and the idea of a green screen that can create almost anything, which I find fascinating and is absolutely brilliant because, people flying and this and that, there's almost nothing that can happen on screen anymore that isn't, that creates that same kind of awe and shock and wonder. But put it in with theater, and suddenly it's happening right in front of you. It's visceral. It's real. So there's an element to that I find really fascinating. But since that has always been there, I personally find it fascinating to go, okay, so how did they do this before? Like, what are the tricks? Example, 19th century melodrama. One of the very popular things during the melodramatic era was the idea of ghosts on stage, which is fantastic. And you're like, okay, so you have a ghost on stage. Well, how exactly do you get it there, right? How do you get a ghost on stage interacting with an actor when you have no electricity or anything like that?
What do you do?
And the way that they did it, was, you know, with somebody in the trap room underneath with, you know, a light behind them that would reflect onto a mirror that would reflect onto a giant pane of glass that was hinged to the stage and hanging out over the audience. So the actor's voice would go over top of that. And it was simple, but at the same time, brilliant when you think about, okay, so now take that and, like, even something like Disney is using the same kind of techniques in their haunted house, right? Mm-hmm. They use the same thing. They use it in the haunted house. When I went there, they had this show where they would project onto a water screen. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, they could have an animated character interacting with a live actor on stage. Mm. So there's all of these advancements that, but when you put them into a live context, you can't just do everything onto a screen. You can't just edit it out. It has to be able to happen right in front of you. And that's always fascinating. That's always been fascinating to me.
It reminds me a little bit of, it's in the film context, but like Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula adaptation from the early 90s, where he does a lot of that. The special effects are on camera.
Exactly.
Practical, and in fact, quite deliberately, early cinema effects that he's trying to kind of use.
Yeah, and a lot of those early cinema effects, of course, come from the theater,
right,
which is great.
Right.
And they're wonderful because they are, you know, tricks of trap doors, smoke and mirrors, basically. And it really is, you know, smoke and mirrors. And there is something really pure about using the, you can do pretty much anything with special effects and green screen now, but there are directors and actors, performers, such as Francis Ford Coppola, Tom Cruise, who go out of their way to make stunts and make the exceptional, right? My question is, and this is an honest question, is just, does it still have the same impact when you have decades of superhero films where anything can happen, buildings can get knocked over and like whole worlds can come apart? Does it have the same impact, especially when you're still looking through the same medium? And I think this is why, from a theatrical point of view, I'm fascinated by it, of going, okay, so let's go back and find out where did those original special effects come from? You look at one of, from a film perspective, Georges Méliès, and like some of the really early, wonderfully theatrical, you know, stuff like Trip to the Moon and whatnot, that where you can see he's so clearly influenced by the theatrical techniques, and it really kind of gives you a glimpse into what kind of things they were doing on a stage in a film.
Greetings and salutations. This is Leon Potter from the Theater Department at Vancouver Island University, and you are listening to Conversations in the Arts and Humanities here on CHLY 101.7 FM, Nanaimo.
I know that when I see a really CGI environment in a film, you know, and it's not that it's not interesting, but there can be an overkill to it, right? Where you where the entire thing just kind of starts to feel a bit weightless and a little bit like there's nothing grounding it, and which is not to cast aspersions on talented people.
No, not by any stretch.
But I wonder if the question is whether the extent to which you want to kind of make everything have that patina or that vibe, that feel, as opposed to maybe, I mean, I think of, say, the Lord of the Rings adaptation from 20 years ago, which did both. I mean, obviously, CGI was a little less advanced back then, but they do a lot of matte painting, practical effects, but then also computer effects, and it's pretty seamless, and the combination's really nice.
Yeah, the model work is unbelievable.
Obviously, that's not theatrical in the sense we're talking about specifically, but are you hopeful for the future of, say, more practical things on stage?
I think one of my own passions in the shows that I do is I really love to try and blend old school and new school for two reasons. One, I find, for exactly what you said, if the whole thing is generated and digital, then it loses it loses a certain element to it. But at the same time, if it's completely old school, it really just doesn't have the same effect either. People will come in, they'll see it, and they're like, oh, okay. And they get bored really quickly. Mm-hmm. But I think if you can blend the two of them together, there really is a fabulous balance of the two of them. So I'm excited. Yeah, I'm really excited about that.
There's a really funny scene, and I don't know if you've seen A Mighty Wind, one of those Christopher Guest mockumentaries.
Oh, wow.
So this one's about putting on a show.
Okay.
So it's a fake documentary about putting on a folk singer extravaganza using these old famous folk singers who are fictional within the world of the film, real in the world of the film, fictional in our world. And they're putting on kind of a gala throwback concert to their heyday. They're all old now.
Mm.
But there's a great scene where there's a producer who's talking to a stage manager, and he just doesn't get stage effects. He's like, he's confused about, can you have like this? So the set involves, there's a real light lamppost and a fake banjo. And he's like, I don't understand. Can you have those a real and a fake? He calls them furniture.
Right.
A real and fake furniture. Are people going to get confused? And it's a really, really funny scene involving a professional getting more and more exasperated talking to this kind of numbskull, right? So the reason I bring that up is that it gets at the idea of a kind of, I suppose, skepticism about effects that this character has. And I'm wondering whether, sort of in a devil's advocate way almost, is there a danger of too much? So, on the one hand, you have Waiting for Godot, right, with the famous stage direction—you know, a tree, a country road, evening—and you could do that play with basically nothing, like two people or three people.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? Exactly.
Versus, say, I was trying to think of the opposite of that, like the Spider-Man musical from a few years ago, which was like all special effects,
kind exactly.
of. It didn't go very well, but apparently the effects were really great, the story not so much. So I mean, this might be hard to answer, and maybe there is no answer, but I guess what I'm asking is there an element to theater which is like, I think you used the word pure earlier, is there a sort of purity to theater that where you don't need things on stage?
Peter Brook, in his wonderful book, The Empty Space, starts it out by saying, someone walks across an empty space and someone else is there to witness it.
Yeah.
And this is all you need for an act of theater to take place. And that really does come down to the basics, right? What you need is something happening in a particular space and somebody to watch it, right? So that speaks to a few things. First off, it speaks to story and the simplicity of story. And then it also speaks to the real key element of theater, which is that relationship with the audience, which really not a lot of other mediums have, because the relationship with the audience for so many other mediums is separated or is happening at a different time. Like an artist will paint a piece and it'll go into a gallery, but they may not necessarily see the effect that it has. In theater, it's visceral. It's right. It's immediate, and it's and so that relationship has always been a major conversation. So to answer your question, yes, it's very easy to get saturated. It is very easy for a director to go, I want nothing but, you know, picture frames and green screens all over the place, and this is it's just going to be huge and spectacular. But in doing so, it's very – and it happens, I'm sure, where somebody will become obsessed with an idea and that idea overtakes a story.
Right.
Right? At the end of the day, we're there to tell a story. So the best way to tell that story will
– like in some ways, the story will tell you the way to tell
the story. The story will tell you exactly – like if we were to do Dracula on stage, well, there's – elements that you would like, okay, well, I'd really like Dracula to disappear here and appear there. All right, so we need a disappearing act. But if you focus too much on those special effects, suddenly the story becomes secondary. And this is where, you know, it's great to work with designers and a team of people to help find that balance and go, okay, you know, this is too much or this is too little, or how do we do this and how do we do that and how do we make this happen?
It reminds me, I was just watching a YouTube review of, there's a new Exorcist movie, like a sort of a sequel reboot of The Exorcist that just came out.
Yeah,
apparently is not great. Mm-hmm. But one of the things the reviewer was talking about was how the first Exorcist, which, and you know, whether or not you like horror, I think it's a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately is a drama about some characters going through some stuff.
Yeah.
And then there's all of this horror architect. I mean, it is a horror movie, but there's horror architecture sort of on top of a drama. So there's a sort of human, you know, it's really a story about a mother trying to, like, save her daughter.
Yeah.
And whether or not the daughter's possessed is sort of almost beside the point, because mm-hmm. the story is compelling. And then, you have a bunch of special effects on the side or part of that story. But if you don't have that, the core, the human core, the other stuff is maybe a little bit superficial. And it also reminds me of, I remember reading Harold Pinter's biography, and he talked about how for him the idea of a sort of a flourish was mm-hmm. like someone moving a cup on stage, moving a glass, like, so that can be as little as that, doesn't
yeah be, exactly,
you know, a big grand gesture, I suppose. Having said that, I was just reading about this new theater in Las Vegas, The Sphere.
Yeah, I've heard
it. Sounds amazing.
Yeah, like I've seen pictures. I haven't, but it looks absolutely incredible.
$2 billion theater arena for music and other things. I think U2 opened it with an amazing performance. It has the walls are video screens and just looks incredible.
Yeah, it looks, well, I mean, it's like those huge IMAX.
Yeah.
Type thing, but on a much, much bigger scale.
So a couple of my questions have been sort of, oh, you know, is there too much? But can we also get excited about where things are going? Like, what's, in your view as a practitioner, what's coming down the pike?
I think there's an enormous amount of opportunities right now. But I think as we move further towards these technical advancements, which are incredible and can help enhance, you know, a musical performance or a stage show or a story or anything along those lines. At the same time, it's exactly what we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, it's about a story, and it's about creating the awe inside of that story. And how you do that opens the door wide to whatever it is that is going to help tell that story in the best way possible. Right? It's always great to be really excited about the cool new things that you can do. But at the end of the day, it's a story about, like you said, it's about a story about a woman trying to save her daughter.
Mm.
Now, you can add the devil into that, or you can...
pea soup vomit.
Yeah, like, pea soup vomit. You can do this and that. You know, however, you can add all of these different effects into it. But at the core, it's about this. And it's that nugget of truth that the audience relates to and hangs on to. Everything else is just cool.
You've been listening to Conversations in the Arts and Humanities. Thanks to Leon Potter for joining me in conversation. Technical production by Robin Davies. Music by Greg Bush. Colloquium series will be back in November with a presentation by Dr. Mike Roberson of VIU's English department entitled There Must Be Some Mistake, Three Perspectives on the Value of Failure. For more information, go to ah.viu.ca and click on Colloquium series. My name's Theo Finnegan. Thanks for listening.